From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the first day of November 2019. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzla. We'll discuss the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass and hear about the latest conditions on the ground for corn and soybeans and what producers will need to be doing with this very late harvested crop. That with Extension agronomist from the University of Illinois, Emerson Nafziger, on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the settlement prices from the CME Group in Chicago for this Friday afternoon. December corn at $3.89 1/4, down 3/4. The March at $3.98 1/2, a quarter lower. And the May at $4.04 1/2, down 1/4. July unchanged at $4.10. December at $4.05 3/4, unchanged as well. November beans up 7 1/2, a rally at the end of the day, $9.24 1/4, the settlement price. January at $9.36 3/4, up 4 1/2. The March up 4 at $9.49 1/4. And July soybeans $9.70 3/4, up 3.5 cents for the day. Next year's November at $9.72, a penny higher. The bean oil up 28 cents, bean meal down 50 cents. July soft red winter wheat at $5.31, up 7 3/4. The hard red at $4.56 1/4, up 7 1/4. Live cattle futures, December contract $2.30 higher at $119.52 1/2. The February at $124.22 1/2, $1.87 1/2 higher. Feeder cattle at $152 1/2, $149.12 1/2. The settlement price again $1.52 1/2 higher. January up $1.32 1/2 at $146 even for the feeders. Lean hogs December contract down $1.55 at $64.45 for 100 pounds. The crude oil up $2.02 a barrel. Ethanol futures 3 1/10 cents higher per gallon. Diesel fuel 1.5 cents higher. That's heating oil and gasoline on the RBOB at $1.65 9/10 cents per gallon, up 6 4/10. Natural gas, 6 8/10 cents higher at $2.70 1/10 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, around 250 points higher. The U.S. dollar up 0.129. And the gold futures, $3.90 lower at $1,507.50. We're now joined by Mike Zuzla at globalanalytics.biz to talk about this marketplace. Hey, good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
What happened late in the session? The rally of the beans.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing in the soybeans was the divergence between the meal market and the bean oil market. We saw a surge in crude oil prices rallying almost 4% heading into the close, over $2 a barrel in both West Texas Intermediate and London Brent. This ignited the bean oil, but at the same time, the bean meal in the December contract was heading towards its daily low and tested that properly within the last 15 minutes of the close. And so soybeans, with the very strong delivery numbers, the second notice day today showing a massive amount of stoppages of delivery, giving us support along with some fresh export sales from China being reported by USDA. Soybeans chose to go the route with the bean oil, with the November in the delivery position, trying to get back up above 9 1/4 on a closing basis. Didn't quite get there on the settlement.
Wheat showing strength as well today.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, Todd, I think the biggest thing from the takeaway for me, no matter what we're looking at in the commodity sector, is we have the US-China phase one trade deal looking good, but wobbly after a phase one deal, and China changing their tack with the impeachment inquiry going into a full-blown impeachment based upon what the head of the Congress said today, Pelosi said to Bloomberg. And then we had the Federal Reserve and the Bank of Japan both report what they were doing in terms of monetary policy and their outlooks. When you look at all three of these things and see that the U.S. dollar sank to a 3-week low and almost a 6-8 week low, and almost took out the 52-week moving average, which has not been taken out on a weekly close since June of 2018. The trade through the dollar and through the crude oil is saying, don't worry about the U.S.-China trade negotiations. We have inflation again. And that was probably the most surprising thing to me, because I'm more nervous about the U.S.-China trade negotiations and USMCA after this week. But the dollar is saying, you don't need to be that worried. So pretty important week when it was all said and done.
Have you been able to discern why the trade feels like there's inflation in the marketplace?
I think they feel as though the major central banks, along with some of the economic data from the United States and some surprisingly strong Chinese data that came out Friday morning, is suggesting that central bank policy is not going to fight an inflationary bias at this point, and that essentially the Bank of Japan and the Federal Reserve are probably done with cutting rates until we get into 2020. And I think that's the best answer, because certainly when the deputy foreign minister of Mexico said that, oh, well, I wasn't right about the USMCA coming up for a vote in the House this week, and it'll probably be drug all the way out to past Thanksgiving now. And then Representative Pelosi said it may not be until the first of next year because impeachment has taken pole position. I'm amazed that the dollar was able to sink as much as it was. So I've got to believe that it's got to be something very strong like monetary policy.
So do you think it's that ASF in the Chinese hog herd has allowed them to weather the inability to buy commodities from the United States as cheaply as it would have in the past, along with the ability of U.S. consumers just to continue to buy products coming in from China, even with a tariff on them, that has caused this issue not to be an issue, I guess?
Yeah, that two questions there. And I think the first question I would say, yes, it has allowed China to do that because they've had Brazilian beans and Argentine beans and Russian beans to substitute up until now. But that time has passed. They've also had ample, if not a massive surplus of pork stocks that they threw away in cold storage because of African swine fever. Domestic herds were just culled and essentially slaughtered for pork instead of being culled, is what we're picking up at this stage. So again, those stocks are running low. And I think when you see Tyson, Sanderson, and Pilgrim's Pride getting ready to be ramped up on sending poultry to China, you see the ractopamine growth hormone being pulled from the pork domestic herd here in the United States. Those two things signal pretty clearly, and you see beef exports as well starting to take off. All these things signal pretty clearly they need protein. They can't get it from anybody else at this point. Now, to your second question, this goes back to the biggest problem I face as an analyst with clients and subscribers, is I see this weaker dollar. I love to see this weaker dollar, and I love to see the wheat come back around. And I think we have some higher prices, but do I hedge those or not? Well, yeah, I think I got to, because between African swine fever not being controlled in the Asian rim and those December 15th tariffs that really hammer the global economy, because it's smartphones, it's toys, it's all the things that we consume and that China produces. And those are the biggies. The ones on December 15th, they're the biggies. And I'm real nervous that if China says, well, we're not going to negotiate with you as much, President Trump, because of this impeachment, and they start playing that calculus into their formulation in their negotiation process, I think he could probably, and even Larry Kudlow even kind of insinuated this today with some media that, look, those tariffs are still on the table. And that's where I think you got to still be a hedger between ASF and the tariff potential on December 15th if you get some overvalue levels.
All right. So is that for the 2020 crop, for the 19 crop, for both crops?
Yeah, I'm about halfway through, a little bit over halfway through on 19 beans and a little under halfway through on 19 corn. Just started 20 beans, haven't done anything on 20 corn. It would be for both marketing years, because if we do put those December 15 tariffs in place, I think both sides will probably go home for the winter and kind of dig in and go into hibernation like the groundhog.
So we have snow here. Last question. Do you have snow there?
Yeah, we had a little bit, but not as much as expected. And farmers are really hoping that we freeze hard and we don't get any more precip. And the models right now are suggesting that. That's probably the biggest thing going into Monday, is do the models get wetter over the weekend as we see the harvest progress numbers Monday afternoon?
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too. Mike Zuzulo is with GlobalAnalytics.biz. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report for Friday afternoon. You can find us online. Listen to us on demand at willag.org, willag.org, or as a podcast in iTunes, the Google Play Store, Stitcher, SoundCloud, NPR One, and Spotify. This morning I took some time to drive around the countryside to look at the corn and the soybeans covered in snow. I took some video. You can find that on the website at willag.org right now. And I was wondering just exactly how the conditions in the field, the very wet conditions from the rainfall over the last week and the snow and all the ice and the cold temperatures might impact how farmers have to deal with harvesting this crop. So I stopped by Emerson Nafziger's office too and asked him just that question.
Well, we've had a lot of rain in some places, and these fields are in pretty good shape to be rutted, I'm afraid. But it's not like it's been raining for the last month. But it's also not the case that it's going to freeze and make it easy for us. It's only early November, and having soils freeze is not that common this time of year, at least not for long enough to do anything out there. So if they freeze in the morning and they're going to thaw, it doesn't look like we're having low enough temperatures as daily highs to get us out into the fields after it's been frozen.
I also asked the University of Illinois Extension agronomist about those wet conditions and compaction. That part he wasn't really worried about. However, he said he was worried about the rutting the producers might do.
Well, we don't compact really saturated soils very much, so that's not really part of the issue. But with the tillage and the planting as we do it today, we really don't want to make big ruts that need to be repaired the next spring. People are probably going to make some in the low parts of some of these fields, but not all of Illinois got as much rain as we got on this east side of the state, so that's going to be helpful as well. Cornfields tend to be a little more solid in the fall than soybean fields, and the late planting we did this year with probably some of that compaction we did earlier in the season might help us out a little bit to keep the combine holding up. We use duals on combines and we take steps to try to keep them from sinking in too much. And we can do any of that that we need to do. But this isn't as desperate as it's been some points in the past. It's just unfortunate that our planting was so late that we couldn't really harvest this crop as quickly as we would have if planting had been done at the normal time. What we really need to watch for in terms of the crop is, first of all, is it really harvestable out there? And we see some corn here that's down a little bit and has snow on top of it, at least this morning. I expect that's going to be okay. Our standability isn't just seriously compromised at this point. But we've all harvested corn in December probably before, and if we have to do some of that this year, we can still get most of it off the ground in most cases. Soybeans are the one that's a little bit unusual to have so much out this late. The first thing, again, is can we drive through the field without sinking in? Because, trying to cut soybeans level with the ground and having it be muddy isn't a very good combination. The other thing we might watch for with the freezing and thawing we're getting now is whether the soybeans are still in the pods. Now, there isn't a whole lot we can do about it if they're not. That's going to be one of the issues. They don't really face conditions like this very often this late, where they've been mature, ready to harvest for weeks, maybe even a month in some cases, and just not able to do it. So they go through cycles, freezing, thawing, moisture goes up at night, dries down some in the daytime if it's not raining or snowing. And so soybeans are going to do their best to stay out there and be harvestable. And when it's this cool, we normally don't expect they're going to get, a lot of diseases developing in them and quality going to deteriorate over time. If it warms back up again, we'll worry about that. But as soon as we can get them off, I think most people will find it that they're at least reasonably easy to get out of the field, and hope we can make progress and get that done before they go through too many more cycles of this.
I also asked Nafziger if he had any concerns about on-farm grain storage.
Well, not too much concern. Of course, the corn is when we get it down in the 30s and 40s or 20s at night, dry down on the corn is going to be pretty slow. If it's cloudy and if we get some more rain or snow, it's going to stop the process for the most part. But once we get below 20, corn is going to dry very slowly under these kind of weather conditions. And when it's cool, that also helps us when we get it out of the field. You know, it's not going to start spoiling right away as it might if it was 85 degrees out there. So pulling air over it, you know, things that we can do when it's cool and at least help give us some more time before we have to get it dried down are going to all be helpful. We always worry about cob deterioration as well as stalk deterioration this time of year. And cobs that fall apart can make it really difficult to thresh this grain off. The other concern we always have when it's weathered like this is just having a lot of kernels pop off these ears as they come into the corn head. We can fix some of that. We probably can't fix all of it, but we should take whatever care we can take and still get it out of the field as soon as we can.
Emerson Nafziger is an extension agronomist here at the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I spoke with him earlier today. I also shot video of corn and soybeans in Champaign County with snow on it. If you'd like to see that, it's up on the website at willag.org. Let's now turn our attention to the weather forecast. Eric Snodgrass from Agrible and Nutrien Ag Solutions joins us. Hey, Eric, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, so let's start with the system. It was really cold here last night. We had snow yesterday. Snow on the ground in Champaign County on October 31st through November 1 is just odd as all get out. Does it mean we have a pattern change coming? And tell me about the system.
Yeah, you know, this has been a tough week. If we just rewind the clock, think about last Saturday when we had so much rain. I remember talking to you last Friday saying, hey, if you can get anything done today, go, 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 because the weekend was going to be so wet. So that we got some places up to 4 inches a week ago. It was beautiful on Sunday, crummy for the front half of the week. Thursday, we have a system blow through that brings in snow. Hey, at least the sun's out today, but we've got, you know, just soggy ground and now snow that's melting and quite a bit of ice because we bottomed out in temperatures last night. And the pattern change you mentioned is really happening north of us. So what's different is that, gosh, I mean, going back such a long way over this past growing season, we really have featured more often than not a big trough out west and a big ridge over the southeast. Well, now that trough is no longer sitting over the west. It's now pushed between the Great Lakes and the Hudson Bay. And therefore, our next at least 10 days, maybe even longer than that, is going to feature northwest flow. So that pattern change keeps us locked into a very low chance at seeing a lot of above average temperatures. More often than not, we're going to be cold, as you've probably seen in several of the maps that are advertised that. And the other thing, too, is our flow aloft is going to be coming out of the northwest. So now what we're looking at here is these little clipper systems, these weak little, you know, things that come sneaking out of, you know, Alberta or Saskatchewan, and they come through the northern plains and just clip us real quickly with some brief precipitation. Good news about that is, overall, that's a drier pattern. So when we look out, even over the next 2 weeks, we aren't right now seeing any major indications of these great big, you know, storm systems sweeping through the country. And we can thank the pattern change and the fact that the western United States and the Gulf of Alaska is all blocked up with a big high over low pattern. So that's a long answer to your short question, but it's significant for us here as we're going to try to get this crop out of the ground. We had a good window more than a week ago, and now we're going to have to see if the way that the soil conditions will respond after this week's precipitation open up a week or so for us to continue harvest efforts.
Are there any big picture things in the Pacific Ocean or in the Arctic that tell you what we're looking at?
Yeah, it feels as though a lot of our, we call them teleconnections. In other words, these are weather features around the world that are connected in some way to our weather patterns here in the United States. There's a few things that I'm watching that I feel are at what I call inflection points, which means they've kind of hit a turn. One of those is this Indian Ocean dipole event. We've talked about it now, it feels like, for about 6 weeks. It reached a peak and it's slowly waning in intensity, and it'll probably do that through the end of the year. Now, why does all that matter? Well, that Indian Ocean dipole event has sent a wind across the open Pacific toward, you know, from Australia over towards South America that's anomalously coming from the West. So what that means is that is giving us almost like a hint of El Nino-like weather for our fall. Now, normally El Nino falls are colder and wetter than average, but there is no El Nino event going on right now. It's this Indian Ocean dipole event, and it's waning in strength. The other thing is, with the cold air sitting over Central North America and going straight over the North Pole and then hitting Siberia, that may be stressing the position and strength, and I hate to even have to use these words, but the polar vortex. It's now that time of year. We're going to start talking about it. And if we start to disrupt that early in the season, in other words, get it out of round, change its speed and strength, that could really send us into a relatively volatile early winter here. So, you know, it seems like every time we talk, I use the word volatile, and it certainly seems something now is kind of brewing with these things changing that is going to impact the rest of our month here, a new month here, and then into December as well. But good news is, at least for the next couple of weeks, I think we're going to have harvest windows open up that will at least be longer in duration than the ones we have been seeing, which is good news.
Do those teleconnections, especially those in the Indian Ocean, connect to South America in any way?
Absolutely. So, you know, one of the things that we like to watch, especially during our winter months, is actually something that often sits between the Indian Ocean and the Pacific and moves back and forth over that area. It's called the MJO. We've talked about it a lot here. The MJO has been taking a backseat to this big Indian Ocean dipole event. Well, when that Indian Ocean dipole event calms down, it'll be the MJO that'll be the new dominant driver. Now, in South America, we know that eastern growing regions, so Bahia, Goias, Tocantins, Minas Gerais, that area has been very dry. They've been doing better in Mato Grosso, but Mato Grosso do Sul has been dry. And earlier in the season, it was dry down in Rio Grande do Sul and Parana. So I just kind of mentioned there's been a lot of dryness in Brazil. Well, if that MJO event jumps out after the Indian Ocean dipole calms down, that could actually spell some later season dryness for the soybeans as well. And this is all going to compound when we start to think about the harvest of the soybeans and the safrinha crop that will go in later. So in the near term, while Mato Grosso is wet, Northern Argentina is wet, I think that we are going to have to watch Brazil very carefully, because even though, you know, they're anticipating some pretty big production out of soybeans this year, despite the late planting, I think that come end of December and into January, which is a critical time for those beans, we might have a story that's not so favorable coming out of Brazil as well. I'll keep watching it. I'll keep you posted every Friday, because I think it could be something that could affect our markets at some point.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible and Nutrien Ag Solutions. Helps us to wrap up this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Remember, you can find it and listen to it on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. You can find all of our ag programming there, in fact, and listen to it anytime you'd like. You can also find us as a podcast in Stitcher, SoundCloud, the NPR One app, Spotify, and so many other places, including iTunes and the Google Play Store. Just look it up any way that you want. And you can also listen to it directly off of the website at WILLAG.org. Now, I know that you're going to be getting back into the field eventually, but do take some time and make sure that crop is harvestable and that your fields are in good enough condition. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.